One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Save big on everything you need when you shop at Menards. Fidy Electric smart home products make everyday living simply smarter. Stay connected to home while you're away with wireless outdoor security cameras. Control all your smart home products from anywhere using one easy-to-use app. View our entire selection of Fidy Electric smart home products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for other great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
This is Jim Semivan, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and I am joined after a couple of weeks of no breakdowns for a little brush up on the lack of UFO news, but gets through some listener points, listener questions as well, by Dan. Dan, welcome.
Hello, hello. It's good to be back. And yeah, it's been a little quiet on the UFO front, right?
Yeah, and you know what? It seems to me, when I go through my Twitter feed, although I've had a really busy 3 weeks with work, that there's still stuff happening, but it's little bits here and there.
Yeah.
And we'll mention Matt Laszlo, Askapol stuff, you know, Warner, Gillibrand, all those are still talking. Chris Mellon's still tweeting. There's articles coming out. There's white papers coming out. But there's nothing major. There's nothing big. And I'll just say it now. I honestly just think it's largely down to this US election.
Is this where a lot of the audience are just going to be like, oh, okay, thanks, Andy, and just switch off?
Yep, that's all. Thanks for joining us. Yep, that's it. And that's why we've got a lot of listener questions to go through as part of this as well. We'll touch on, we largely have some touching points, don't we?
But
do you feel the same, Dan, that US election, that's taken up the news, it's taken up all the reporters' time? I think even a lot of the conversations on Twitter are going background to US election stuff, very understandably as well. So I'm not going to say that could be. I'm going to ask you, do you think that could be a good thing that all this news going on front and center on the world stage with Biden and Trump will allow maybe some of the UAP stuff to happen in the background without too much fanfare, without too much fighting? While other folks are not distracted, but they've just got their mind on other things. So maybe if it's legislation that's being, you know, pushed forward and conversations are happening, it might make it a little bit easier.
Yeah, absolutely. We, in previous years, UFO stuff has passed and it's never been floored for discussion in the Senate or the House and things like that. So it's kind of had the stealth path through, where, you know, it's ended up on the president's desk and people will remember, you know, Trump passes UFO bill. It wasn't a UFO bill. It was snuck into the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. And it was done so quietly and it was bipartisan and it was supported and no one spoke out about it. And anyone that's been following this is familiar that this year and last year, there's something called the UAP Disclosure Act that we've been trying to get passed, and only certain sections of it have passed because it's been controversial and it's been discussed in the public forums to death and on podiums, and people have said why it's bad and why it's good. And there's just a lot of noise around it. If it could pass quietly this year while all this other election stuff is going on, I think that would be a positive, because they, you know, everyone's attention is on the election. I think the most that we're talking about UFOs in relation to the election is, are they going to speak about it at debates? Are they going to be asked questions during press conferences and things like that? So even the, you know, quote unquote community, their attention is on that kind of stuff. There's nothing really kind of happening right now that is huge, but we're building up to some things, including, you know, supposedly we've got Lou's book coming out imminent. And that should have hopefully some revelations in it. Imminent.
Oh, I thought you meant it was coming out imminently.
It's imminently. We've also had James Fox announce that they've finished narrating the new movie, The Program. So we'll see the follow-up to The Phenomenon around the same time he's hinted as Lou's book comes out. So hopefully a 1-2, and maybe we can even get Grush's op-ed in there at the same time and just do a 1-2-3, you know?
We're going to get to the op-ed thing. That's a listener question, so I'll leave that to get into, because there's definitely a conversation there.
Yes.
You've mentioned a couple of things there. Let's really honestly fire through the touching points, Dan, because I'd like to get to the listener question stuff. Because we say, there's not a lot of big news to break down without us being really granular on stuff. A couple of white papers have came out from Saul. One was Helen McCaw, Dan. I think that was back at the end of May now. Well done to Helen getting that one out. Do you remember Helen's the title of that one?
Because I've pulled up the other one. I don't remember the title. I've got the other one in front of me as well. But Helen does great work, and her background is with the Bank of England. So she really knows economics. I'm fortunate enough to call her a friend and talk to her, and she's been really great. I think you met her at a conference where we did a podcast panel as well.
I've got it. It's UAP policy implications for the government of the United Kingdom. So
there you go. So yeah, Helen essentially goes through, as it says, the implications for UAP in the United Kingdom, but in a policy sense, in terms of the economy, banking, security risks, those kind of things, really pragmatic, practical approaches. And if you read it and your eyes glaze over because you're just not into reading about policy, then rejoice that UAP is becoming boring and part of legislation, I guess.
Because it's going to, and again, actually, that's a question that's going to come up soon. So we'll bank some of that chat for that. not a boring side of things, though, but I appreciate what you mean, though, that there is going to be a boring side to it, and we'll get to that in the whole grand scheme of things. And then the most recent paper that came out in the last day, a couple of days, July the 1st, is the anomalous health threats, which is a little bit more sinister sounding.
Yeah. Health security considerations for UAP, where they speak about, they focus on the security implications from biological effects of people or on people. You know, we all know about the Rendlesham incident. A person thought they got cancer from the radiation from going near the craft, and the insurance was actually paid out. Senator John McCain's staff helped that pay out. So, you know, we all know insurance doesn't pay out, and they weasel out of things if they can get out of them. So it's kind of a revelation that they even paid out. So he was helped, and it's not the only one as well. This paper lists a few different incidents. So the Falcon Lake incident in 1967, where people were burned and showed neurological symptoms. We have the Colaris incident in 1977, which if people listening want to know about the Colaris incident, there's such a good website on it, and it's the official government website. So if someone just does a search for Night of the UFOs, it'll be called, and the Colaris incident, they'll see all of the evidence gathered by the government from the military and just put up transparently. I wish the US could kind of get into the same place and do things like that. Because it's nice to be able to say, look at that, the government resource, the transparent government resource is the best place to go look. This is why we want countries taking it seriously and reporting on this stuff.
That the Cash Landrum one that's on there, I was watching something on that just the other day, going back over some stuff, and like Betty Cash ended up with breast cancer, which may or may not have been directly from that. You know, Betty, Vicky and Colby, who was a kid at the time, huge signs of radiation poisoning, all incredibly burned. There was stuff like Vicky's hand on the dashboard of the car when it screeched to a halt almost made an indent, an impression, because the heat from the object softened the materials of the car, things like that. It was really, really interesting. But again, it's all that stuff that they tried to sue the US government or get compensation, because they believe, not to go into the whole incident, that the presence of Chinook helicopters may have resulted in the object being one US military tech, or they were involved in it somehow. So they should have coughed up. It was thrown out of court due to lack of evidence, and they never got that money for it. But all this kind of stuff, Dan, that we're going to talk about in a little while, is things that are going to potentially come up. Insurance, you know, is going to be like a big business if and when disclosure happens. You could only imagine that would be the new PPI. I think we've talked about that before.
Absolutely. I can imagine Mary Woods is a good example. He was featured in Unidentified, and his stories kind of come back around, where he was at a base, they saw a big craft in the sky, and then time blanks for them, and they end up, you know, facing a canyon wall miles and miles away from where they were. That kind of thing, you know, they've encountered the craft, the radiation is present. Chances are in the next few years, he's going to start suffering health effects, you know, as people do when they get older. And he's going to have the question on his mind, was this caused by the craft that I encountered, that the US military have denied even happened and called me a liar over?
Yeah.
There are some court cases ahead of us that are going to be real interesting. And if anyone wants to write a version of A Few Good Men, but with a UFO case, I'd be up for watching that.
As long as it was done seriously and properly. Yes. And again, yeah. I feel I'm doing this after everything you say. There's a question that's came in that I've kind of changed about a little bit that I'm going to ask you about some UFO movies as well.
Okay.
But that, cool. that would actually be, yeah, I would watch that.
Could
you can't handle the truth about UAP. Yeah, that would be the...
There you go.
Jack Nicholson very much in there. So yeah, good to see Sol Foundation getting those papers out. That's their fourth paper now published, I believe. I think this is the kind of thing... It's one thing, an organization coming together and putting on an event, but what you're actually seeing is results and action off the back of this organization, Sol, coming together, and the people they want to be involved doing work, like you say, that for some may almost come across as kind of boring or mundane, but this is the kind of stuff that science and academia are going to have to get involved in to help with, and it's all important work as well. So, good to see, and obviously Sol likely have their next event towards the end of the year or early next year as well, to see in what kind of direction they go from there. I'm all good with that.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be really interesting to see the next Sol event and see who turns up, I think, because they've made a big impact in the field and beyond as well to make the conversation sensible. And Gary, you know, who runs the Sol Foundation along with Peter Scarfish, he even commented on the NASCAR Mummies the other day to call. Yeah. It was Stephen Brown, right, that did the presentation on the Good Trouble Show, and you spoke to him as well not too long ago. And he said that it was really curious. Curiosity is what should be leading us here. So I'm all down for seeing Gary follow his nose on that and be like, you know what, if you're going to present good science, I'm going to listen. This is the language we need.
That might have even been, was it Robert Connor? Might have been the guy that
Matt had
Stephen Brown on and Robert Connor back to back. I've not seen either.
Right.
I've been working, like everyone knows, for 3 weeks. I won't keep banging on about that, so I'm way behind. But that stops now for a few weeks in a nice way, which is good. next up, Matt Laszlo has been doing some work, Dan, over at Askapol. Go and check out the work he does there. If you appreciate grassroots, boots on the ground reporting, he literally is running back and forward in the halls of Congress, in the Senate, whatever, up and down escalators, jumping on trains with senators, congressmen and women, and asking them questions, literally shoving a microphone in their face to ask them the kind of stuff that people don't get a chance to. So if you get a chance, go and check out. They've got a free subscription model. And then if you can or want to support them, please do that as well. But he was asking Senator Mark Warner about Senator Gillibrand wanting hearings with Arrow coming in to talk about the unknowns and how they're tracking them. So yes, we know Arrow have got all those identified stuff and we've solved loads of cases. She wants Arrow to come in and go, yeah, but what about the ones that you haven't solved?
Sure.
What about these? Give us the details on these. And that's not to say they're all alien craft. Again, for the love of God.
Got to keep that in mind.
Chance. Most of them are something that's Chinese, Russian, Lockheed Martin's latest prototype. But there's going to be a couple that are really, really seriously worthy of investigation. Further hearings, though, on that, Dan, not to sound like a broken record, I can't see any hearings, as much as they're talking about September happening till next year to this election.
It feels too close, doesn't it? Like, I would agree with you. I don't think they're going to happen till early next year. They've got to keep saying they're going to have them soon, though. I just don't think they have the time, realistically. You know, even if the desire is there, they really want them and they could get it organized, I think the date would come up and they'd be like, yeah, this, we're kind of taken up by more important things and more pressing issues right now. Not to say the UAP issue isn't pressing, I think it is, but just, you know, in the mainstream, they're going to be like, yeah, the UFO conversation can wait until whoever's elected comes in and then we can actually do something about it instead of going, maybe this guy's in, maybe they're not.
Yeah. Which of all these folk are still going to be there at those times in those positions? Are you going to potentially get more? I don't think we could really get less UAP-friendly folks in these positions because it's been tough anyway. So maybe you roll the dice and go, do you know what? Can we get some folks in that are willing to listen and willing to push this forward a little bit more? Who knows?
I was just going to throw in there that I was heartened to see, you know, with UK elections, it means we're going to get a new defense secretary. So who knows again, maybe someone a little bit more willing to talk about the unknowns.
Dan, guess what? I've got a question on that in a minute.
I'm
not even joking.
I've been practicing the remote viewing. When I say I've got an RV now, I mean remote viewing. Not
people, and Dan may think I'm taking the piss here, but genuinely, there was a lot of really good questions that I was like, yeah, that is coming up. That's the first question, actually, from someone called Dan.
Amazing.
So, yeah, so hearings, yeah, can't see them till next year. I wanted to throw in, Dan, we're recording this on Saturday, the 6th of July. I'll get it out for folks who pay for this tonight, and for everyone on the free feeds, it'll be out probably on the 8th. But Roswell anniversary, Dan, the 78th anniversary, if I'm right.
Yeah, it's been so long now, hasn't it? It's crazy.
I think it's 78th.
We were also currently, I can't remember, it was 1952, the Washington, D.C. flap, where, you know, UAP were flying over the Capitol and things like that. Really well depicted in the series Blue Book, if people want to go search for it and kind of see. But yeah, just apparently lights flying over the Capitol. So when people are like, why don't they land on the White House lawn? They did. We just, you know, didn't follow up, apparently.
I believe, Dan, and you'll be impressed with this one, that was the 19th and 20th, and then the following weekend of the 26th and 27th of July for the Washington Big Flap.
Very nice. Yeah. I like that. Is that AI, or have you just got that knowledge in there?
I've actually, genuinely, for a change, have that knowledge in my head.
I was doing some reading.
But Roswell, I just wanted to know, that's a staple entry point into this topic for many folks. I think everyone, even with no interest in UFOs, knows about Roswell. People who don't know about wrestling know who Hulk Hogan is. You know, it's that kind of, you know, you don't eat burgers, you know who McDonald's are. So any of that kind of stuff, it's a name. Roswell is synonymous with UFOs. For you, how has your views changed on Roswell from your early interest in the topic to maybe where you stand now?
So when I started, you just assumed that this thing happened and then it was the conversation. I didn't realize immediately that actually it took about, you know, 20, 30 years for that conversation to come to the community en masse and, you know, documents to start showing up and things like that. So it wasn't as immediate. And now I look at it as kind of, you know, something happened, but it's a really good lesson in how kind of myths kind of get their claws into this community and this subject. And there's so much there that it's almost impossible to decipher. And it's one of those things now that, you know, we say it often, like, are we ever going to know the truth? Are they ever going to tell us? Is this one that we just got to be comfortable kind of putting in a closet at some point if they do give us disclosure and kind of from this point forward and they don't look backwards? Certainly looking at the Arrow report, it suggests that they're just dismissing it and kind of going with the weather balloon thing. But there are just so many questions. And there are a couple of really strange things around it as well, you know, countless really, but just to talk about something more recent, there was a TV show done by Chrissy Newton and Mitch Horowitz that's been kind of airing. And I think the name escapes me, but I think it's Alien Encounters. And it's filmed in Roswell.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think you're right.
I think it is. But yeah, it's filmed in Roswell. And, you know, they talk to experiencers and consult a panel of experts to see if they can figure out what the experiencers saw. You know, a number of our friends are kind of in the show talking about their sightings. So I'd recommend everyone go watch it. But in that, they find someone has an artifact that they think is from the Roswell crash. And it was put in the museum. And just this week, someone stole it.
Could be innocuous. Yeah.
Could just be someone being a knob, kind of going in there and going, oh, I'm going to take this and not really thinking of it. But also that's going to become a part of the myth soon, that, you know, these pieces that people are finding are being stolen left, right, and center. And it serves to muddy the waters because it's hard to decipher. Unless we have a time machine and we can go back, then it's kind of going to be impossible to figure it out, I think. But it's fascinating, and it's an entry point, like you say, that everybody gets. It's an on-ramp that is so permeated the whole kind of culture that everybody knows it.
Some poor cleaner's been going around doing their dusting and like sucked it up in a vacuum, haven't they?
Probably.
don't want anyone to know. But no, I saw that. And you're right, it's Alien Encounters, Fact or Fiction.
Great.
Chrissy and Mitch. But isn't part of the title, but lovely folks as well, so check that one out, folks. I think especially when there are maybe, and I say there's a lot of folks listening to this, Dan, I've told you before, who they're very much for the what's happening now. There's just as many folks who are less interested actually in the progress and the updates, because for them, disclosure happened, they know it's real, They've seen enough, they've been around long enough, and they care about the history, the investigating, and that whole side of it more than the politics. So I sometimes need to remind myself of that as well. Definitely go and check that one out, folks. I've not watched it, Dan. Did you watch the BBC documentary, the Welsh one?
Not yet, but a big props to Vinny Adams from Disclosure Team. He was in it. You know, they got in touch with us through UAP Media, and he put his hand up to go and speak to them about Broadhaven and everything. And I hear it's a good show. But it's accessible to people that aren't in the community. Not perfect, but when is anything ever perfect, you know?
I'm in it.
You're in it.
I wasn't. I didn't know
you were in it. Just randomly.
And indirectly, people messaged me to say, are you in that documentary? And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm not involved in it at all. But they've used a clip of me on BBC Radio playing over something. So literally my voice is there. And I was like, that's my voice. So
you should give them a copyright strike.
I think they are very much like, you were on our BBC Radio Cornwall like 2 years ago. And that's one of those clips I've kind of used, like a very generic line. So
There's probably like something in the T's and C's. Like if you speak on our radio, we can use the material for, you know, in perpetuity and across the whole universe.
100%. Or it could be AI just replicating my voice. But yeah, well spotted, folks. It's literally my voice for like 2 seconds.
When you said you were in accidentally, I could imagine you like walking onto set with a Starbucks and just looking around like, and then just
Sorry. And speaking of documentaries, Dan, James Fox, like you mentioned, his documentary's almost done. We've probably talked about this before, but now it's looking like it's almost complete. What are your kind of expectations at this point? And I ask that, I'll frame it. Most folks were expecting James Sands would be a part of it. James Sands was a central midfielder from America who played for Rangers, folks. Apologies. A few folks will laugh at that in different ways. Jason Sands, the whistleblower who came forward after Grush, maybe in a way that showed why Grush done it the right way and not on a Twitter space. No disrespect to Jason. And it looks like, do you think he's going to be removed? And do you think that was a reason that maybe went a little longer? Not that it must be a hell of a lot of work anyway.
Maybe. I mean, these things are a lot of work anyway. So I don't think, I remember James saying in various interviews that with the phenomena, he killed so many darlings during that film, just took scenes and just deleted them. You know, they were his favorite scenes. So James clearly doesn't have any hang-ups about doing that. If he feels that Jason kind of misspoke. But for my money, I'd like Jason there presented properly. You know, the Twitter space wasn't the place to do it. The film will reach a bigger audience than the Twitter space did. And yes, in the Twitter space, he was talking about all sorts of other things and he's followed up in different ways and things like that now. But it would be nice to see his story presented properly with his accreditations and things like that amongst more whistleblowers. So whilst I'd like him in it, I don't want it to be all centered on him and for the whole film to just, you know, if you disprove Jason Sands, the whole film's bunk. We've heard countless times now that there's 40 odd plus whistleblowers. So I'd like to see some new faces, you know, as much as Jason Sands should be in it, new faces are important here.
Are we going to get faces though, or are we going to get silhouettes? Because I wonder, is it going to be the voice or here is whistleblower X? And I've not got an issue with that, but I just wonder, given what's happening, given whistleblower protection still seems to be a thing that's very much up in the air, that it's probably safer that they go behind a shadowy, you know, screen.
Yeah. I mean, Alex Dietrich did an unidentified, right? She was just a voice and a silhouette. And then many, a year or so later, she kind of came out and said, hey, here I am. I can talk about it now. And maybe it'll go that way. But there have been some interest in pulling to and froing with the whistleblowers that maybe James filmed with them properly. And now he has to blank them out, you know, use the editing software to kind of make a silhouette.
Because
and be
things
like,
haven't happened.
We don't want them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And listen, I won't speak for you, but I'll ask you, would you be comfortable if James said, because of what's happened, one of these whistleblowers was going to be in the film because of the lack of progress and due to protections, I'm just going to read their statement. And you have to take his word for it. For me, I've got enough trust and faith knowing James and the way he does his work. I would be okay with that. How do you think that would be perceived if that was maybe a worst case scenario?
That's the thing about it, isn't it? It's how it's perceived. For me, yeah. I would prefer to hear those things than not hear them. You know, we can drill down on them after the fact, but I know for a fact the wider community would go, that's, you know, he could have made that up. I don't think he would, but, you know, there are plenty of people like Stephen Greenstreet that would doubt it, and plenty of more skeptical people just in the community, you know, no names, would doubt it. And at this point, we need more than things that you can doubt, you know? So I hope that if one of them is like that, great. And there's 39 other ones that we see on screen talking about things frankly, great. But again, I don't want the whole film to ride on, you know, a red statement from someone. That would be disappointing. But like you say, we have trust in James. He's been great so far. And it's been unfortunate seeing him struggle with Chicken Soup of the Soul, who distributed Moment of Contact. James spoke out about that and that his film was being taken off him and stuff. And people thought it was a Men in Black thing, but it's not. A company just went bankrupt and they hold the rights for it and he's trying to get them back. A number of other creators were affected. Monsters of California was also distributed by them. So we'll see how that's affected. But I'm excited to see James free of that and focus on what he's good at, which is making banging UFO movies better than anyone else on the planet.
Yeah, and I think that ties in nicely. Like you say, Lou Elizondo's book is due out in August. You've got James Fox's documentary finishing up, probably just looking at some of the tweets, I'm guessing end of the year, early next year, January, February, that one comes out. So if we've had to maybe trudge through this first half of the year, expecting stuff to happen, shout out to the folks on the Discord with the whole, you know, coming soon, because a lot of them coming soon, and it's, yeah, the soonening hasn't really happened.
The soonening.
Yeah, that's not my copyright, that belongs to other people. But there are things, at least I think Lou Elizondo's book is probably going to give enough conversation for many for a month or two once it comes out. Lou will do a book tour, he will be on TV, he will get to the big podcasts, he will then get to the smaller podcasts and everything in between.
Hopefully we see him on Rogan, because he's been absent from there.
It's got to be the first stop, hasn't it? Like,
yeah. Hopefully. And it also begs the question, you know, connected with the hearings, if Lou's finally talking openly about everything that's in his book, then we should pull that into the hearings. I'd love to see him talk on the oath, and I know he would take the oath and talk about it. You know, he's not shy of doing that.
Okay, devil's advocate, what if he didn't?
I mean, it wouldn't be super meaningful. It's that five pillars thing, right? How this, he spoke about it before, where the academics, politics, the social conversation, I can't remember what they all are now, but they all have to kind of be coddled and brought along forward. And probably the book is going to be the public conversation piece of that. Some of the other things will progress a little bit through it, but it's mostly going to be public facing, isn't it? So great if it's at the hearings. I don't see it as a point against it if it's not, but I'd love to see Lou do that.
I think it'd be important that he does. I think he's tweet enough to show that he's been in Washington over the last couple of years at various times, and then within a couple of weeks or months, something happens. So there's the involvement there. I think even the folks who would doubt Lou's past and the programs he's been involved in would need to say, well, he's at least involved in some of the conversations. Either that, or he is literally loitering in the halls of Congress.
just hanging out.
Yeah, just hanging out, and it gets taking in the background. But I think for me, I'd like to see him there talking officially, properly, maybe about some of the things that have maybe just taken time to come out. And I think we heard that probably more through David Grush being able to say, there are certain things I want to say that I'm not clear to say yet. And then within a few months, he could say, well, now I can say this.
Yeah.
So that's it. And Dan, lastly, you wanted to add a little bit. We mentioned that Trinity was out, the A.J. Hartley, Tom DeLonge. Fiction, for God, I always fucking forget. Fiction's the fake, isn't it? Non-fiction's real.
That's right, yeah. Fiction made up, non-fiction, it's like documentaries and things like that.
Stupid term. I've done like English at a really high level in school as well, and I always struggled with what those were.
One of those things that when you think about them too much, it's like, you know, sometimes your brain just kind of goes, wait, I want to go left. Which way's left for a second? And it's just a brain fart, isn't it? Then you think about it too much and then you can't figure it out.
Yeah, it's already gone. I'm not even joking that I could remember what they are. But that book's came out. I've not read it yet. I've got my copy. I got one of the signed copies. Very nice. No one who got a signed copy, you know, they're numbered.
Yes.
None of them are numbered.
Oh.
It's literally blank inside everyone's.
Fair. I guess write your own number in if you want to.
It literally says this is copy number blank. And I saw a few folk had tweeted going, oh, they've made a mistake and I've got a special copy. No, they're all blank.
They're all like that. Yeah.
Yeah, they've never filled it in. So I've not got a chance to read it yet. It doesn't look like it's going to be a long read. But you have with Elena, I believe?
A bit. So we're up to chapter 5. It's kind of just at this point it started. You know, there was a UFO mentioned in the last chapter, so it's kind of hitting the ground running now after setup. I'm enjoying it so far. If you're into cars and things like that, there's a lot of detail in there that just goes over my head, talking about engines, things like that, that I'm sure someone will get a kick out of. But it feels like it's right in line with that kind of Da Vinci Code with UFOs, you know, carrying on that secret machines tradition. And yeah, good so far. But Tom and AJ had a conversation when it launched, and there were a couple of interesting things there. Basically, AJ was saying that, you know, he's not a UFO guy. Tom is the UFO guy. Tom thinks on a macro level about the plot, and then AJ kind of figures out the intricacies. And the whole idea is, did the test of Starfish Prime accidentally bring something down? And emphasis on accidentally, was there a group who knew that it would bring it down, and that's what they were waiting for and watching for?
Movie development. Starfish
Prime was a test in the atmosphere of a nuclear weapon to see its effect on the electromagnetic field and things like that. So yeah, essentially shooting nukes into the sky and blowing them up, and it apparently knocked something out. I know, right? It's just in hindsight, like, yeah, what's the worst that could happen? Now I've got the Dr. Pepper theme tune in my head. But they knock something out of the sky. Some places say it's a satellite, but it's part of UFO lore that actually what they knocked out of the sky was a vehicle and a craft, and it was recovered. And there were one or two interesting things in the talk. One of them that I hadn't heard before, Tom told a kind of Russian spy story where there was an event in New York that Lou was present at, and the pieces of bismuth, magnesium bismuth, were there kind of for everyone to view. And it was kind of, you know, it's off in the middle of testing now. Where can I see that? But they were shown that piece in New York City by 12 people who were investors. Lou Semivan was there. But two people came that weren't invited, and they were Russian, and they were kind of loitering around. And during this event, apparently they had two armed guards in front of the bismuth to stop people approaching it. These guys were trying to get around them. So Lou, during his speech, pretended to do something with people's phones to kind of say, oh, you know, if you do this, you'll switch the phone off and this is better for XYZ. Just to get them to turn their phones off. One guy did turn his phone off. At that point, the other guy disappeared. Right as Lou finished the speech and the one guy turns his phones on, the other guy reappears, the other Russian guy reappears, and they leave. And apparently they were told by Jim Semivan, like, oh, they're on the cocktail circuit. So it's a story essentially, you know, explaining that there are Russian spies who just go around events trying to get a lay of the land, and that includes UFO events as well. And they were there trying to gather information. And it's yet another thing that kind of makes you think, okay, you know, maybe it's their job to just gather intel in a similar way to when you look at the CIA reading room and it has a bunch of stuff on it that's so esoteric. And it's literally just someone thought it was worth cataloging at some point and nothing more than that. So it could be that, but also, you know, there seems to be an interest from Russia on the UFO stuff in the modern day, that and they're not talking about it anymore. So it begs questions, right?
That's pretty cool. I like that. I hadn't heard that interview yet. I've got it saved on one of my playlists. One of the YouTube interviews, yeah?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
I think if you go on the the Stars or TTS Talks podcast, it's the latest episode of that.
Right, okay. Awesome. No, cool. I like that one. Listen, Dan, loads of listener questions. Let's get through these in. Some of the stuff I've teased or touched on. First up was that question from Daniel Green. Do you guys think a new UK government will move the needle here in terms of disclosure? I'm going to answer it really quickly. No.
I mean, I touched on it earlier. New Defence Secretary, maybe. It's a big maybe. That's doing a lot of heavy lifting. I would expect no. We have so much cleaning up to do that just, again, other issues are going to take precedent. But this is even more reason why, if you're in the UK, get in touch with your local representative and ask them about it. The only way they're going to know is if you talk to them about it.
Yeah, there's no public appetite on that scale for a UFO conversation.
Yeah.
With everything else that's going on. You walk along high streets, half the shops are closed, bars and restaurants are struggling. You try then bring up all UFOs. For me, there has to be big movement in the States for our media to pick it up first.
Yeah.
And then that, I think, could spark a public conversation that would obviously bleed into politics. I can't see it happening any other way, though.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Whenever you speak to the DOD, sorry, not the DOD, the RAF
RAF,
the Ministry of Defense. I was going to say Ministry of Truth then, that's not.
similar.
Yeah, probably have one. They always kind of give the response, you know, you can say to them, I want to talk to you about UAP, and they'll respond with, there's no evidence of extraterrestrials. So that's really sus that they have to talk about extraterrestrials when you don't even mention it. It would be nice to see them talk about it more. Recently, we've had the document released from Australia showing that there was a Five Eyes forum between the UK, New Zealand, Canada, America. Who am I missing? It's one country there I missed.
Germany?
Maybe. Okay. I've forgotten anyway. Anyway. Five Eyes Forum. Google it if you want that one country that I've left you hanging on. But they were all present, and they were talking about UAP to Sean Kirkpatrick and Arrow, who was presenting stuff about it, and none of them are talking about it. And Australia even went as far to say, we did not attend, and now we have paperwork showing they attended. So tomfoolery afoot. The media didn't pick that up and run with it, but hopefully that can snowball and kind of become a bigger thing if more documents are released.
Awesome. Questions from Peter Earnshaw. Peter only sent in two. Must have been a busy day for him. So thanks, Peter. God, this first one, I keep going back and forward on this is more of a thing. I might do this in that way of the Nazca Mummy stuff I done. But so given recent interviews with Michael Herrera and the excellent supportive investigation by Joey, not his name, do you believe Michael's assertion that the US in all probability has ARVs and is using them for human trafficking? Moreover, do you think this adds legitimacy to the claims that the US had this tech since the 50s, made by Stephen Greer, and his narrative a bit more believable? Do you want to take this one first?
This is really interesting. I was one of the people who, you know, said that that story didn't really light my world on fire. Michael Herrera's one. But we follow it, you know, because even if the bias is present, the way you fight that is to keep listening and to keep taking things in as neutral way as you can. The story bears out, you know, Michael Herrera, there have been a few kind of developments since then where he was invited to conversations on bases with higher people and stuff like that. And it all kind of sounds like wishy-washy BS. But I think Joey Is Not My Name and some of the other guys that have covered it are doing a really good job of kind of gathering the evidence that shows something is there. And he's definitely getting the attention that he's saying he's getting. He doesn't know what's happening either. I don't necessarily think that one proves the other.
Yeah.
You know, that Michael interacting with officials now proves the kind of human trafficking angle. But it's certainly bearing out that, again, tomfoolery is afoot. But it all seems to bear out. So this is a spinning plate of, I really don't know for me. And I've just got to kind of let it play out and see where it goes. But I can certainly say that, you know, I was down on it initially and I'm eating my words now.
It's still kind of a question of two parts, though, for me, in the sense that one, is Michael legitimate and who he says he is? And the answer seems to be yes, like you say. But the second part of, in no uncertain terms, what he's saying is that there are basically back-engineered vehicles that the US government uses to human traffic, that we have, or the US government has alien craft that are being flown by both either humans and aliens, or, you know, just humans for that kind of purpose. That for me is a very, that's a, I don't know, like, how could you even begin to...
And just to be clear, I said I saw proof of something. I've seen no proof of that. That, like you say, it's a separate thing. You could almost imagine the modern stuff happening to him is, you know, you could make an argument. It's like Richard Doty just indulging and putting BS into this guy's head to make him believe that, this is what happened. And it's just a psychological kind of fuckery, I guess.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's really compelling, though. Or curious, I would say.
Yeah, curious. I don't know if I struggle with that in the same way maybe with the orb stuff, where people talk about, is it maybe going over my UFO line. You know, we've talked about that before, how much yes. is too much for you. So when you start saying, oh yeah, we've back engineered craft, I can be like, yeah, yeah, I can believe that. We fly the craft, yeah, yeah. And we use it for human trafficking purposes. I'm like, ah, that seems like, God, human trafficking is a horrendous thing, right? But using reverse engineered alien vehicles for human trafficking seems like an extreme.
Yeah, I think I said before, it feels a bit like using...
We're going to smuggle cocaine with Tic Tacs.
Yes.
Really?
Right. It's a weird thing. It's like, oh yeah, we're going to make an F-15, but we're going to put bow and arrows on its wings. Like, it doesn't make sense necessarily.
Yeah. Not for me. Yeah. And I don't think it adds any legitimacy to Greer. I'll always stick right now until anything changes that Greer had good intentions. Greer had some stuff, I believe, that he was doing the right way. And along the way, whatever happened, I think it went off the rails. I don't want to repeat myself too much on that.
I would agree. So I've mentioned it before, but just in case anyone hasn't listened and they're new to listening to us, I was fortunate enough to go on Theories of Everything and help Kurt interview Stephen Greer a little while ago. You can Google that. It'll pop up. The first half of the conversation is all Kurt kind of talking about the physics with Greer, and that gets a little bit ropey because Greer isn't willing to kind of provide the details that Kurt is asking. Kurt, familiar with physics and understanding it, he asks a lot, and Greer isn't able to relay those details because he's not a scientist. And then we get into, you know, Greer's relationship with Tom DeLonge, Greer's flare drop, things like that. So if you want to hear Greer's responses to those questions and decide for yourself whether he's telling the truth, go listen to that. It's a revealing character thing, I think. But be ready for an hour of awkwardness as well at the beginning.
Same question Peter asked as well. So not to do with, we've been over multiple times where we stand with the Nazca mummy stuff, but he's asking, if they were proven unequivocally to be alien, what do you think the next step would be? What do you think would happen next? Do you want me to go first, Dan, or do you want to?
Yes, you go first, because I know you've had a number of conversations deeply on this recently.
Yeah, even then, they've not swayed my needle massively either way. There's a lot to the story I didn't know, which was interesting. However, if it came out that, yes, these, or even just one of them, which I think from what I'm seeing, again, I've got some stuff to catch up on, that some of the samples given, there seems to be four distinctly separate things we're looking at in terms of two size of bodies, a hand that's removed and something else. Some of the stuff is probably ancient hoaxes, or for some reason it's been put together a long time ago. If one of them is shown to be truly non-human, then next step would be, I don't know, mainstream media tour. Like, you would have to literally have every major network have it presented in a big way. I would get Jaime off of it and a real spokesperson at the front of that, probably a real serious scientist.
You want an anthropologist or something, right?
Just someone who's been involved with that. I'm not saying draft in, a fucking celebrity to be like, oh, I'm the front man for this now, right? But someone who's been involved with it, who can talk to the media, who has a charisma, but can also present in a plain way why these are what they are. That probably would involve a team, and then you'd have discussions around it. I think you would need some really big, serious shows. You would have to have some massive specials where, 2-hour special tonight, Nazca Mummies, it's broadcast worldwide. We have found something. It would probably be done in quite a serious way. Every major network would pick that up. In the same way, Dan, we've talked about, if a documentary maker or anyone came off a legitimate, here is the best UFO footage on the planet we have just taken, because you happen, let's say, Dan, you happen to be filming a documentary on the Vermont coast. I don't know if Vermont even has a coast, right?
We have the White Mountains where Betty and Barney Hill were.
So you're filming the White Mountains. Yeah, you're all set up. You've got your light and your cameras and stuff, 4K, different angles. And right in front of you, as you're about to start shooting, broad daylight, massive craft comes into view. Wow, look at that. Boom, it goes. But there you go. You've got the best footage. You're not releasing that in documentary form 1 year later. That is going to every major news network, and the best one to the highest bidder that night, and they launch it in the biggest, most spectacular way possible. That's how that would happen. So same with this. It would get exclusivity rights. It would go out and boom, it would be presented. And then from there, I think everything else just opens up. Aliens are real. Where are they here? Are they here already? What about Roswell? What about crafts? What about the Tic Tac stuff? And then you've got Mellon, Greer, Elizondo, DeLong, Semivan, Lazar, Corbell are on every TV network all the time for a period.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with all that. It makes me think of the Homo Naledi stuff, how that was found, how it was presented, and that stuff. They did interviews about it as it kind of went along. But then the ultimate point for people to go to was a really well-made, well-put-together documentary that posed a lot of really interesting questions, and a book that kind of backed up and went a bit more in-depth about that kind of stuff. I think that's kind of where you're going to need to start to kind of get people on board, as well as, you know, a team of scientists kind of presenting it in a compelling manner. And I can imagine the clips kind of being in there. But it also makes me think of the alien autopsy thing that happened in the 90s, where they had a documentary of this alien autopsy, right? And everyone was really convinced, and it turned out that it was complete nonsense. And there's a really good interview with the guy who faked the whole thing, the guy that directed Spyrios, I can't remember his surname, but he was a London guy, and he does a really good interview with the guys over at Astonishing Legends, where he goes into detail about what he faked, how he faked it, and how he made it convincing to people, which was less about, you know, make the guts look real, and more about, let's make sure this ID badge follows the same format as those in government. Let's make sure the equipment in here is kind of what you'd see in the modern day in an operating theater. Little touches like that, the kind of, you know, in a movie would make it convincing or unconvincing. And I'm sure that conversation will come up, you know, how much of this documentary is nonsense, how much of it is made up. But you kind of need those conversations public and in academic areas to kind of round out the conversation that, you know, they always say in court cases now that there's you win or lose in public perception, you know, the media around the court cases. But you still have the court case that gives you an answer either way, whether you agree or disagree with it. So we're kind of going to be there. And I think the great thing about it is, whether they're real or not, when all this stuff happens, there's conversation about non-human intelligence and UAP and what that means for us. And we start discussing the implications for biology, for economics, for, you know, the Bank of England, for insurance, for all these things. And so this is where we want to go, right? The more conversation about it, the better. As long as it's solid, scientifically led conversation, then I don't think anyone should have a problem with it, for better or worse. Like I say, whether they're real or not, it's the conversation I think that matters and can snowball.
Cool. Thank you for that, Peter. Casey says, please thank Dan for the excellent movie recommendations. I have Jules and Monsters of California queued. And I've added to that one, Dan, is there anything else you recommend right now for folks who are looking for UAP or phenomenon-related TV series, movies? The bad news, of course, is Outer Range has been cancelled over at Amazon Prime.
Oh, no. I haven't finished season two yet.
There will be no season three going forward unless it gets picked back up down the line. But right now, it's cancelled.
Might happen. Yeah, that might. It's been thrown into a hole, you could say. That's a shame. The acting powerhouse is in that one. So I've been watching a show called From recently. A few years old now, but they're making a season three. And it's basically about people that get stuck in it seems to be a bubble. Once they're inside the bubble, they can't leave the town. They drive out one way and come in the other way, you know? And there's a lot of weirdness. Reminds me a lot of Lost. A couple of the characters are kind of similar. And that's kind of going into the quantum nature of things and talking about that kind of stuff. And I'm a big fan of things that can succinctly communicate those big ideas in just a format where you're like, I'm watching a television show and you've just had a science lesson on quantum nature of reality, you know? So that is good. I'm also reading, not watching, but reading the Annihilation book series. That was a movie a number of years back with Natalie Portman and a couple of other peoples where they went into this place called Area X. And it was like a horror film. And the idea was that a meteor crashed and there was an area that was coming under the influence of the meteor and this alien intelligence that we couldn't understand.
Ah, you mean Venom? Sounds like Venom.
I mean, the new Venom movie's all around like E.T., right? And his buddies come into the planet. And in the comics, I know the Venom, it's like a multi-universal entity that communicates with itself across the multiverse, which could get interesting. But yeah, Annihilation has a lot of really cool out there ideas where it's talking about what is life? Like, could scientists even sense it? Like, does the thing that crash landed even look at us and see consciousness? Or does it just see, like, we look at an ant, like, oh yeah, they're just performing their functions and this is a machine, there's no consciousness there or free will, and things like that. I'm always up for having those questions kind of reflected, because it just makes you think about things a little differently. So yeah, I guess my recommendations would be Annihilation, the book, as well as From and Trinity.
Cool. I don't have much to add to I'm watching like The Boys and The Bear right now, so nothing UFO related. Highly recommend both of them though. But yes, I've watched a few documentaries and bits and pieces when I've had the chance and work. Eyes on Cinema, great YouTube channel with a lot of old stuff on it as well. I know a few people mention that quite regular to me, so shout out to them. I bought them a coffee on their Patreon or Buy Me a Coffee site, just because I go on it quite a lot, so appreciate that. Used a website, not a website, my God, I sound old. Used a YouTube channel, is it The Sneezing Monkey? And the guy kind of debunks stuff. He's not like a debunker though, but he goes on videos and he'll do like 15, 20 minute breakdowns of why a certain video is likely CGI or why it's faked or hoaxed. For example, the one that went kind of viral of the UFO over Haiti a year or two ago, that looked like something out of District 9. Like he puts on that and breaks it down as to here's why it's CGI, blah, 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 blah. But the guy's like, from what I've seen from the few videos I've watched, he's into UFOs. Like, he wants stuff to be genuine, but he just breaks down why this is nonsense and everything else. So just watching little bits and pieces like that. Even me trying to work out some really cool sightings and going back and going, oh, actually, that's bullshit. And then other ones you go, oh, no, this guy's saying, look, this is probably legitimate. So
there's another good channel called Smarter Every Day. And this guy, big space nerd, so he's always going out and just filming like the eclipse and stuff. And he filmed with a 4K camera the eclipse, and he caught something going across the frame. And he didn't know what it was. So the video is him basically saying, like, I'm really excited by this. I don't know where it is. I'm going to go to all these experts and we're going to try and figure it out. They think it's a satellite, but then in trying to find the satellite, they can't find it. No satellite lines up with what they filmed. And he finds like another guy that's filmed it from a certain distance away. Yeah. So they know it wasn't in front of his lens. And I find things like that really instructive. They don't come across an answer. It's just an unknown. They convince it's a satellite and they just can't identify it. But I love that they're frank about it and that it shows you their process. And I think a lot of videos, when people put them online before doing that, they could almost watch this video and go through the same steps, you know, just to get rid of those prosaic things.
Yeah.
I see a lot of, you know, where people will film a video and they'll say, I didn't see it while I was watching it, but, you know, when I watched it back later, there's this artifact in it. And the truth is, they were looking at the sky and they're looking at a lens flare on their phone that wasn't present in front of their eyes, because our eyes don't do the same thing. So there's a big educational opportunity, I think, around understanding what's in our skies, understanding how optics work. And that leads to some really interesting conversations around how we interpret light and, you know, how orbits work and so on and so forth.
Absolutely. Stephanie asked a question. Thank you. We've kind of answered it though, Dan. Stephanie says that the US elections and associated uncertainty as to, you know, which politicians are actually going to be still in their positions after the November election appear to be severely impacting progress. She agrees with us. In her opinion, disclosure should therefore take place within one legislative period. And I think we kind of agreed that would probably have to be the case, that they are now in their positions, even if it was the UK with a new government, the US with a new government, whatever it may be, there probably has to be a starting point there to which the ball gets rolling down that hill, doesn't it? It'd be very difficult for something to happen now, a few months out from, even if Biden stays, there's still going to be a lot of, you know, reaction around that and everything as well. Same in the UK, if the government hadn't changed, there still would have been turmoil and reaction. So it makes sense that at the start of a whole load of things, that would be part of it as well. So I totally get that. Not much more to add. Dan, we'll jump on to the next question. This one's a what if. It's from Baron Fly Guy. So, and I like this. This is the kind of shit I think about sometimes. You'll get why straight away. What if the aliens have stolen the technology from another race, and that's why they haven't recovered the vehicles that have crashed, because they don't know how to use the tracker technology to locate the vehicles? While that gets a little bit Fast and Furious, you know, 47, which does sound like it would still have Vin Diesel in it, the whole idea of what if these beings, or some of them, have taken the technology either from their own race. You know, I think we've talked about that before. What if it was almost like Breakaway, where they stole some stuff and have just been, you know, joyriding around the galaxy?
Yeah, or, like Doctor Who, right? Like just steals the TARDIS and off he goes, and he's influencing all of time and space. And
but means well. But yeah.
But means well. Yeah. This things like this are really good because they help you get outside that box of, okay, it's a species interacting with us, it's a prime directive, and they're all things that are really on the surface of the conversation. But once you get into it and you kind of start thinking, okay, well, if there is stuff out there, they would have interacted with each other. And we even have, is it the Nuremberg, I want to say, the woodcut from like the 1700s, where it depicts, you know, a battle in the sky over this town.
I know,
and
the one
there are multiple different craft there as well. So it seems to suggest that, you know, there's this kind of relationships between species going on beyond us and without us. And of course they would share their tech. Of course things would be stolen between them. And it's worth thinking about this kind of stuff. You know, just being Independence Day, happy Independence Day to everyone who celebrated it. We spent it watching the movie Independence Day, and we didn't watch the god-awful sequel, but I was showing Elena a kind of a summary plot of the second one. And in that one,
is that the one you sent me?
Yes, it is.
I've not watched it yet, but yeah.
Okay. It's really funny. You should watch it. But I totally forgot about this part of the film where an orb shows up on the moon and they shoot it down thinking that it's the same aliens from the first movie. And it turns out, no, it's the remnants of another species that the aliens that we met in movie one, they didn't wipe everyone out, you know? So this is like this one silver orb is what remains. And that speaks to that, right? The idea of there being multiple species interacting beyond us, and what would we do if, you know, it reminds me of three-body problem as well. But yeah, what would we do if we found not just that we weren't alone, but in fact that the things that we looked at as super advanced are in fact bottom of the food chain when you look out. They're not even close to being the most advanced in the universe.
And I'll give you time to think about it while I'll tell mine. What's the kind of stupidest question you want the answer to? We get disclosure. We find out there's aliens that they're literally walking about Paris or whatever, right? Johannesburg, I don't care. What would be like the stupidest question if it was like, okay, ticket number 8942, Dan Zetterstrom, okay, you're up. What's your question? What would you want to know?
Do you have one?
So I'll give you mine. Mine's would
be
like,
is Bigfoot real? I guess something like that.
Oh my God, what a waste. So, my one would be around like, do you have like employees who build these craft? So how did a craft come to be? Are they like grown? Are they born in some way, shape, or form? Are we talking like a Nope type scenario where something births a craft? Is it something that's like made alongside entities? But like, what's the process? Is it like a factory where it's literally some entity?
See, I don't see that as a stupid question. I think that's a really good question, and I feel like it would definitely be answered before my ticket number 8 million whatever came up. So I would assume that it was
something. You were quite near the front.
8,000. Oh, okay, yeah, that is quite near the front.
That's why Bigfoot was a fucking waste.
Yeah, right. In terms of functional, see, my serious question would almost be the same as my stupid question, because so many people would probably say it's a waste, but it would be around consciousness and how they think of life and free will and you know that kind of stuff.
I'm just thinking, because Bigfoot's obviously real, so why would you bother wasting a question on that? That's all good. I like a what if, so any more what ifs, send them in. We answered Awakening to Reality's question on the Michael Herrera stuff, so thank you. I alluded to a few things earlier, Dan. Balzini asked about the BBC One documentary, or the BBC documentary. We touched on that. Thank you. Turf Tavern asks, what is the status and what are the murmurs of the David Grush op-ed? Also, there seems to be far more movement in the skies for UAPs. Is this due to people taking more notice? Media unable to quash stories because there are far more events? If the latter, what could it mean, etc., etc.? Just on the Grush op-ed thing, it's either it's not coming out at all because of whatever reason. David Grush has been relatively quiet, you know, for a while now. Or it is just a case of timing. And like you alluded to earlier, Dan, I've said before that, you know, documentary from James Fox, hearings come out, Lou Elizondo's book, David Grush op-ed, maybe another couple of whistleblowers come forward. There's a lot of stuff that could happen in a relatively short period of time that could have quite a big impact to keep the door being kicked down.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm curious where the op-ed went. At the moment, it feels like it's been thrown into that same hole from the outer range. But I hope it hasn't been. I hope it's just a case of, maybe when it was written, it's not applicable now, the way it was framed, the way that, the questions that were being asked. So, a lot has happened since then, which was, it was like January, right? That's half a year ago that we were told we were going to get it soon. So I wouldn't be surprised if the goalposts have kind of moved a bit and it needs editing or readjusting, but it would also be awesome to see it come out as a 1-2-3 knockout to get the conversation really fired up towards the back end of the year after the election is kind of done, so people can start demanding of the new administration, whoever is like, hey, our skies are insecure, people are at risk, what do we do about it?
And wiser one asked the same question, but I'm just going to expand on that about the Grush stuff. It could also be that he has a book deal and he has been told, do not release anything. Same with Elizondo, don't do any appearances. We're paying you for this. We've got the rights to it. Shut up. And then he has to submit his story, food officer, all that kind of stuff. And there is one, the official side of things through government, but also with any kind of deal like that, he can't talk about it. So it could just be that.
Again, we already
a bad thing.
We spoke about Jason Sands earlier, presenting bits of the story over social media and things like that. A book where Grush would get to just talk at length and in detail about what he wants to say is better than an op-ed, and it's better than him going on like a podcast or, a Substack or anything like that and pouring it all there, because it's just going to get a wider audience. It just is.
Yeah. And if that allows for more time to pass where he goes, realistically, one, he makes some money off it, no issue with that, because he's, out of pocket, leaving his job and everything like that, great. But also, he goes, do you know what, in a year's time, I could probably talk about a whole lot more.
Yeah.
It'll be down there in a book that I know won't be released for a year's time, all that. So it could be anything, but I'm sure we'll hear or see from David Grush before the end of the year. If not, that it's even just at the Sol Foundation's, next symposium, potentially. So I'm sure we will.
It would be quite cool, like thinking of the idea of Grush releasing the book, it'd be really cool if this year we get Lewis, next year we get David's, the year after that we get Carl Nell's, the year after that we get someone else's, and the aperture just opens up a little bit more every year with what they're talking about. Because there does seem to be, I can sympathize with the people who think of like the PSYOP angle. Not that I think it's a PSYOP, but I think there's a specific way to roll out this conversation. And we've been told that from various places as well. So it's not a conspiracy. It's just a bunch of people trying to roll out the conversation in a sensible way. One book a year with a lot to digest would kind of, it would keep it rolling nicely, and it would give people time to get through those things and for the media to cover it properly and things like that.
And this could just be that group of people's way of doing it. This might not necessarily be, we've got permission from the government. This could be their friend. This is how we think we could do it. And it's got to be chess pieces. It's got to be progress. It's got to be steps, sometimes a step back to go too forward. And it's not even guaranteed to work. But they think, based on who's in it, who's involved, the way it's going, that would be a way to do it. So yeah, I could see that as well, which would... the more the merrier, if there's going to be various angles of attack for this.
Yeah.
CD Arwen asks, I'm rarely hearing about UFO baiting, and I've heard it mentioned in passing, but nothing in depth. Consider investigating it further, please. Dan, your thoughts on, for me, I think the whole idea about baiting UFOs, right? The idea, if anyone's literally going, what's UFO baiting? Putting something out there to draw them out from wherever they are.
Yeah.
I think the reason we probably hear very little about it, it infers a level of knowledge. For me to say I know how to draw something out of something where it is, I know what it is, or I've got a good idea what it is, I know something at once, and I know where to go. So for me, for anyone to even talk about how they have baited something, or why they've baited something, or what they've done, they would have to maybe go into details they don't want to go into, and give away sources, methods, and maybe levels of knowledge they're not allowed. That's why I think it's maybe a lesser.
Yeah.
I reckon it's quite high up in the UFO hierarchy of conversation as things that aren't talked about.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. We've been told it happens. We've been told it's been happening over the last few years. You know, Cobell alluded to it with the Omaha stuff when they were off the... There was an exercise off of the West Coast when the Omaha filmed the transmedium sphere kind of going into the ocean. Lots of conversation around that, but we were told that they were baiting UFOs there. And we've been told in the past that they baited UFOs. And the one bit of conversation that has happened around it is to do with frequencies that they're emitting. Bob Fish kind of spoke about it, that they could emit a frequency off the coast of Florida and they would attract these things. But, you know, just because you're holding a lighter up and the moths are coming, it doesn't mean that you know why the moths are coming in the first place. But it does kind of start cluing you in into how these things see the world and how they operate and things like that. And if you have that ability, it means you can spend more time with them, studying them and things like that. So yeah, you're right. It implies a lot of knowledge and a lot more of a proactive effort to engage with these things than anyone has spoken about so far. So that stuff would be super top secret. That would be way down the line. That's the mad scientist at Area 51 going, let's deploy this and we can, you know, bring them in and film them and study the movements and electromagnetic signatures. But
yeah,
how reliably they're able to do that, how much they understand that, that's all up for grabs.
It's one thing you hitching a load of nuclear material to the back of the RV and driving about, you know, Nevada going, yeah, we're going to catch some of these things. That's very basic. But you're going, actually, what I've done is narrowed, and this is going to be wrong scientifically, but I'm going to narrow down this very specific isotope and I'm going to heat it to a certain temperature. And then what we do is at a certain time of day, we cool it down really quickly. And what that does is draw these things out. And it's like, well, that sounds like a hell of a detailed way to do this. So there's been a journey to get to that point, and you don't want to tell me that journey. Like, no.
Yeah. That, by the way, that didn't not make sense.
Okay.
So this is fine. Yeah. You know, like changing the temperature of something like instantly would be an anomaly, right? So if something was tracking it and looking, they would go, oh, what's that? Let's go see.
I'm going to edit out that I said that then and sound like a genius.
Yeah.
That's my really base example from just some reading I've been doing of quantum physics books recently. So thanks. And then you go, I got it wrong because it wasn't quantum physics, but thanks. Question again, we alluded to this one earlier, Dan, from Algo. If disclosure were to happen and the presence of non-human intelligences were to be confirmed, which companies would profit and which ones would suffer? Please speculate. I've just added to this, Dan. I think it's easier to talk about types of companies rather than go, oh, BT or, you know, Sky or, you know, 7-Eleven. Like what types of companies? And this is where I alluded to earlier again, Dan, insurance companies massively straight away. Not even joking, abduction insurance. Close encounter insurance. Look at pilots who have come anywhere near these things would go through the roof. Offshoot of those would be security companies. You know, if you think Ring doorbells that are, you know, something now, imagine like lining your roofs with various materials to try and keep out alien craft, and all of that would legitimately happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the biggest benefit immediately is going to go to the people who are studying it, which we think at the moment is military and aerospace. So you would see those things being bandied around, you know, if they have, I don't know, maybe Lockheed tomorrow becomes a battery company because they've got this fantastic technology that they can give to the world for a price, of course, that will help kind of save our energy woes. Medical stuff is going to be massively affected based on how we'll be able to, you know, read the molecules and things, interpret them, change them. There are allusions in UFO lore that these things can edit at the genome level and things like that. So that would be a whole new boon for science. And then our lifespans get longer, and that has a whole bunch of implications too. Governments would benefit, and not in terms of trust, because trust is going to go down the pan for a long time when all of this stuff comes out. But in terms of being able to keep their secrets, depending on how it comes out. But in terms of keeping their secrets and using that in a kind of soft power way to make other countries kind of, you know, form coalitions and things like that, it would absolutely be used in that way. And anything that touches economic, it's hard to think of something that wouldn't be affected, to be honest.
Obviously, it does say profit and suffer. So it's suffer, because a lot of those, I think, would be profiting. Suffering, would banks suffer? Because people running to take out money as they would do in cash and, you know, stock markets, how would they be affected? Again, individual companies, like private aerospace through the roof because they've all got this stuff. But would banks be hit? Would oil companies be hit? Because people straight away go, right, well, but you would imagine oil companies are going to be heavily invested in future technologies and propulsions and stuff like that anyway. Mm-hmm. You would think so. Yeah, I think there'd be a lot of stuff would come out that would be like big money making. We've talked about it enough before, Dan. This idea that overnight, oh well, that's it, bin your cars tomorrow because everyone gets a Jetson style saucer. Not happening. Not
We'd love it to happen, but it's not happening, right?
No. Do you know what? I feel really bad telling my 8-year-old that he asked the other day about, you know, flying cars. Are we going to get flying mm-hmm. cars when I'm older? And I was like, probably not. I was like, you can't trust people with ones with wheels. So you give somebody a flying vehicle, they're just going to hit buildings and, you know, do a lot more damage to folks. Like you fly over Glastonbury and plow it into a field.
Yeah, Jesus. That, it would just be awful. Yeah, people can't deal with 2D maneuvering a vehicle with four tires, let alone 3D maneuvering. This is why pilots need to be trained to a crazy level. It's just the disasters get exponentially, or the accidents become exponentially
genuinely
worse.
Dan, right, I've never thought until you said that there, that we actually have an example of that now, that we've got pilots, because they are trained to fly vehicles. We don't have, so people would have to be trained to the standard of pilots. Can you imagine that in your driving test? Okay, you're on lesson 834. Like, oh my god! Like,
yeah. This is, now we're going to understand ion thrusters.
Yeah,
just
100%. Yeah. So, we did go into that algo. So, if you're newer to the podcast, algo, maybe not from the very start. We done an episode ages ago. I'll try and dig it out for you on that kind of stuff. Like, what would change after? What wouldn't?
Because I think if you
the back of something like that.
Yeah, if you search for "what if" on the YouTube channel, it'll pop up, or like on Spotify or whatever, it'll pop up. It was a "what if" format though. I think,
but it was,
like,
based on a question like that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And we were like, "Nah, all the blue sky thinking." We were really like not negative, but we were looking at the downside of it. You know, nothing would change overnight, and it's all shit. What's the point? It's like. Fuck disclosure. And last question, Dan, from my friend Gary. Gary asks a really random question, and it was really random. The first
is
one...
Is real? No.
Oh, worse than that. No, Gary asks, doing this over the years, do you think you've ever taken or fielded questions from aliens, others, dimensional beings, or any entities, or where you want to put it, like a taunt or a tease? No, I don't.
Oh.
I've had a few strange individuals call me some weird things, but I don't ever feel any of them have been like, you know, otherworldly. Although, Dan, we are all made of stardust at the molecular level. So, you know,
we are.
In a way, if you want to be spiritual.
In a way, even Andy, is there milk in the fridge? Is a question from a being from another world.
And then even in what is milk?
Yeah.
But the heart of a dying star once. but I thought this question, more discussion, Dan, to finish off. Do you think there's a case for AI being developed by future humans or whatever entity as a way of building the future they want or the future they need to survive, or that the AI is how they come about?
Yes, and I've spoken about this before. Like, if we have, essentially, we've had Tom DeLonge allude to it, that there are multiple timelines, some traveling backwards, all traveling at different speeds. Physicists, there was currently a paper released in the past week where physicists are thinking that time dilation is a lot more prevalent in the universe than they thought, which just means time advances at different rates depending on where you are. It suggests that maybe, you know, take Dr. Michael Masters's future humans idea, that if that time stream exists, maybe they need to come back and do things to guarantee that they exist. That would make a banging movie. I'm sure it's been done. But yeah, there's every suggestion that if in the future, you know, the road that we're on leads to an AI singularity in the future, being able to go, okay, I can reach back in time and change things, it's going to do all it can to bolster its existence, to make itself better. And that might be our direction. If we say to it, protect the human race, that might be how it interprets that signal. We always go back to movies and thinking about films, and this kind of came into Moonfall, right? At the end of Moonfall, spoilers if you haven't seen it, because this is like right at the end, but it turns out that inside the moon is an AI creation that it suggested that humans sent out into the universe many moons ago, and it actually has come back changed from exploring the universe, and it's kind of mopping up everyone's consciousness. We think it's killing us, but it's not. It's safe storing all of the consciousness of the human race inside it.
Remind me, I hated Moonfall. Is that the one I thought was really bad?
Yes, it's awful. It's terrible. It has great lines such as, the moon is helping us.
Like, I couldn't work out if it was a joke or if the CGI was meant to be bad. It was that one, wasn't it? Okay.
Yes. Yep. It was one of those big disaster movies that it just falls on the wrong side of the fun or middling line, and it falls into middling. But it has some cool ideas, and that one happens right at the end, and then the film finishes. And I was like, oh, it's just getting going. But it kind of plays with that idea too, you know? What if we make an AI that kind of changes into something else and deems protecting us is coming back and destroying us and saving our consciousness in a computer? We kind of have to juggle with these things because there are unknowns when it comes to this stuff. And there was a paper by Hal Putoff last year, I think it was, kind of came out widely. It was released before, but the whole idea of it, he explored the idea of ultra-terrestrials and kind of basically said, hey, if these exist, there are fingerprints to show that they exist. You know, if there's another species sharing this planet with us, resources will be going missing. Things like that, we would be able to see that there's something else here using these resources, and that would be like a little fingerprint to show that they're around. We could kind of do the same thing with this scenario and kind of feel it out and kind of see, okay, what would be the modern, what would it look like now? If that was to happen, what would it look like? And the things that it would look like would be, you know, AI kind of hitting this massive, you know, almost afterburner and becoming a massively important conversation and people racing towards creating the first general AI that can think for itself. It will be reaching back to kind of do those things. And it's tantalizing to think about, you know, what if the Roswell craft was someone going back in time to see the Roswell craft and they ended up being the Roswell craft. Great Futurama episode around that, by the way.
I knew you were going to say that immediately. Yeah.
It's a great one. But all these things are in play because we just don't know. And there are fingerprints we can search for. But I mean, I'm not smart enough to search for all these fingerprints. But, you know, some academics out there, you like, for example, Helen, look at the economics of the implications of UAP in the UK. That's something that, you know, you can find things in there that will give you these little, oh, is that proof that they know? Is that proof that they're here? And they build a puzzle picture, or they build a puzzle. And yeah, you can make conclusions based on data. But all these ideas are in play, and we've just got to kind of start trying to take them off the table one by one, being really curious and considerate without being biased or jumping to conclusions. It's going to be a big journey. There's a lot to explore.
Yeah, and Gary mentions, you know, almost like a weird cycle. Makes me think of The Matrix, that this has happened before. It goes in a loop, and, you know, the machines know, and there's programs within that run this stuff. I think there's a good chance a lot of the stuff, it always sticks with me through no good reason, that the Tic Tacs are some kind of drone from something or somewhere else. Not to say that couldn't be AI, future AI, something else is realistic or hyper-realistic AI. I struggle with AI just now, though, that most of what people are calling AI is machine learning. So literally, it's just all the stuff that has been fed onto the internet. Mm-hmm. Or imagine basically feeding a computer a library, and then when I see people online, not to have digs at people, but saying they're having conversations, like they're actually speaking to a person, they're not. They're just talking to a computer program, which is taking everything that it's been fed by a person and regurgitating it in a very clever way that makes sense to have a conversation, because it knows what a conversation is, how a conversation should be structured, and largely it's what is the next most sensible word to put in this line which will make a coherent sentence. So then folks go, I'm having a conversation. You're not really, because there's nothing sentient to what it's doing.
It's not thinking.
It's not like in The Matrix when, you know, the computer starts talking to Neo, where there's actually something, there's sentience talking to him. But it turns out it's Morpheus or Trinity. There's something on the end of it which is sentient. There's not. This is just as if ChatGPT woke up and said, good morning, Neil. That's it. Yeah. It's a really good Google.
It's stats. Yeah, super-powered Google. And it's kind of, that's understating it. Like, it's really good.
Yeah,
but to the point where it can trick us because we look for patterns in things and so on and so forth. But if I say to it, you know, what's the stock market going to be in the week? it's looking back on past data. It's not a magic eight ball. Like, it's not going to be able to tell me what happens on my birthday next year, or it's not going to be able to come up with brand new theories. There are specialist versions of it that are being built that can maybe do those things real soon. But that's not where we're at right now. It's copying, it's mimicking. And it says a lot, I think, about people that we see ourselves as like these individual free will things. But if most of us are tricked by something like that into thinking that it's sentient, it one, shows us that we're not as smart as we thought we are and not as complex. And two, just shows that we don't know what sentience is. Like, we need a definition for this before we can apply it to something. And that's kind of part of the difficult conversation of saying, how we achieved AGI? Like, how are we going to know? Because if you ask ChatGPT at the moment, are you sentient? It's going to search its data banks. It's going to find a quote from 2001 and it's going to say something like, close the pod bay doors. And someone out there is going to go, oh my God, it's sentient. And no, it's not. But it's good enough to trick you and to trick us. And there are a lot of implications in that. One thing I wanted to mention that's kind of relevant here is many moons ago, Stuart Hameroff and Roger Penrose came up with a theory of consciousness in the universe where the idea was that consciousness is fundamental. These are the guys that presented that academically and put a theory out. They have since won a Nobel Prize for other work. So people kind of keep entertaining their theories. And they propose that these things in our brains called microtubules were responsible for thought and being us. And there's not really been any way to test that since they proposed it. So it's just an idea, right? It's just speculating. But this week, there was a paper released where they were looking at microtubules and how they were affected under anesthesia. Because we don't really know how anesthesia works. We don't know how it shuts down consciousness, but we know that it does. And a lot of really inert gases kind of do it. And they took a certain chemical and they started applying it to microtubules and basically found that, yes, absolutely, if you kind of put this thing in the microtubules, consciousness as we understand it shuts down for the individual. So I thought that was really cool because it not only speaks to scientific discovery that things are ridiculed, then tools advance, then a test is engineered like 50 years later, and then they can test it, and then it shows part of it to be true. And then the research kind of comes. But it also shows that our understanding of quantum computers. So right now, you know, if you go to IBM and you look at their quantum computer, it has to be at absolute zero, like minus 270 odd degrees Kelvin. It has to be at absolute zero to work. And the thought was that our brains can't do that because our brains aren't absolute zero and they're kind of warm. They're like room temperature, higher, I'm pretty sure. So they shouldn't work. But this is kind of bearing out now that our brains seem to work on a quantum level, on superpositions. And I kind of don't want to speak about the implications of that because there's more work being done. But it does seem that consciousness seems to be fundamental to the universe in some kind of way that we don't understand. And that research is ongoing there. And part of understanding consciousness would be replicating consciousness and leading to general artificial intelligence and probably a realization that we are just machines that nature made that are artificial intelligence. Really exciting area of research, and it's going to have huge ramifications for so many different areas of study, UFOs included.
I'll do need to wrap up, Dan. I'm being summoned, but I wanted to say, one, thanks for your time. Two, you did mention copying and mimicking. Something else that copied and mimicked was the Tic Tac that copied and mimicked Dave Fravor.
It did.
So you're saying about AI. I mean, that points to, you know, that copied and mimicked him. On that, folks, I've got, I just want to put out, I've got Grant Cameron on in the next couple of days. So if folks want to send in any questions for Grant, researcher and author, been on a few times, very popular gentleman, please do send those in. We'll be discussing his new book and a little bit more as well. So yeah, awesome. Dan, thank you for your time as always.
Thank you for having me. Happy Independence Day to anyone that celebrated it a couple of days ago by the time they hear this. And all good. Any football games coming out? Rangers? Exciting ones?
Preseason? No. It's all preseason stuff. Not like that.
I was hoping for a good answer.
I'm going to cut this bit out now because I'm going to talk about football. I'll tell you in a second, right? Thanks, folks. Sure. Thanks for listening. Catch you in a bit. That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify. Just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Save big on everything you need when you shop at Menards. Spidey Electric smart home products make everyday living simply smarter. Stay connected to home while you're away with wireless outdoor security cameras. Control all your smart home products from anywhere using one easy-to-use app. View our entire selection of Spidey Electric smart home products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for other great deals happening this week. Save big.